here for? On what one? Oh, okay. It's just the day job. Huh?
No problem. We just wanted to be here for him as he's always here for us. Do we have any, we know that the controller is traveling, and running, is on his way, is en route. It's, I wonder if we have any announcements or presentations or anything for the good of the club? Al? Any Secretary Collins? Any poetry readings today?
Put it on my desk, you
I should have asked everyone to bring their out there, their party piece. Does anybody have anything interesting that you want to expound on as part of your agenda items? No? This is the group that specializes in keeping their stuff uninteresting once it gets to the board. Elliot, do you have anything?
You know what? My power didn't go out.
Now, I recall at a meeting, I believe the treasurer was out of town at a meeting that we had, and there was a presentation on a topic she was in which she was interested.
We're not ready to
have
a government presentation today.
Why?
We're not ready. I'm not ready.
Well, actually, I got
it. Yeah, he had the presentation, and the governor was concerned. He did ask.
Yeah. I think the
But if we have it loaded up, great. Do we not have the PowerPoint loaded up from last time?
It was the people from the company. NIC. We're all here that day. They were ready to give a presentation.
Well, it's a shame they're not here today. For these moments. So, Jerry, what is the comptroller's brother? Does he want us to hang?
Yes, he wants you to start.
He wants us to start?
Yes, sir.
He's read the agenda.
Okay. Okay.
Well, can I just start
sure.
by saying,
Madam Treasurer,
because everyone in this room has heard from me before about my problems and my neighbor's problems with our local utilities. And I do have to say, first of all, that I understand some of my good friends from Annapolis, you now know what we're talking about. But secondly, that Pepco, I think, from our perspective, really did an unexpectedly good job or had a lot of luck. I don't know which, but our power was out for less than a whole day, which was pretty good. On the other hand, my secretary's power was out for at least a week down here. So that's, I think some people did a great job. Other people were struggling. I was listening in to the phone calls and very impressed with the sense of organization. I know Secretary Swim Staley and Secretary Collins were on the organization going on and the knowledge and the close working relationship with the weather folk from all over. It was very impressive. It was a good instance. Unfortunately, the public doesn't know enough about it, but a really good instance of our governments, state and local, working together and with the private sector to keep people as safe as possible from harm. And I just salute you all.
Well, I want to thank all the members of the cabinet, as long as the treasurer was kind enough to bring that up. We had a meeting yesterday of security cabinet, but in a larger forum and setting here. The good work that's been done on planning by Richard Muth and his folks that allows us to do something as complicated as evacuating 3,000 kids on foreign student work visas. They're here in Ocean City for the summer. As you might imagine, they did not bring cars with them when they came from Albania or Russia or China or Jamaica or other places. And we not only had a plan in place to evacuate them from Ocean City. But we had drilled and we had trained with that plan so that when the mayor of Ocean City made the decision, given the forecast that he needed to evacuate, we were able to put that plan into motion without any delay. Aspects of the plan did not go as planned, but the other 8 of the 10 things did go as planned, and we were able to make the contingencies. But that one little example underscores why planning is so important. In the old MEMA, before Richard's leadership, during transition, a member of MEMA actually said to us that they believe that planning is overrated. But without the plans, you can't hope to make it through events like these as well as we did on this one. We also had a new innovation. Maybe you can still pull it up, although the whole map's green now, Kevin. Could you try to pull up the power outage map? We were able to track, Madam Treasurer, and put online by county. Here we go. In a simple sort of dashboard form, and I'm going to pull up one of the old ones and show it to you here. That map is now all green. During the course of the event, there was a time when that entire map was actually virtually every county, at least west of Mountain Maryland, was red because of the number of outages that were going on. Where's one of my old maps? Here we go. See if I can get the better. No, that's from too long ago. So anyway, what it allows you to do, though, is to click on, Kevin, go down and click on a county that still has some outages.
What are the numbers?
At one point, we had just over a million households without power. Mm-hmm. In the state. And so the a million households without power. Let's see if I can find one of the other maps. And what this allows you to do is to, can you go down a little further, Kevin, like zoom in on the county? That's going out. Go to one, there we go, in Prince George's. Go down a little further still. Anyway, that shows you 463 people, 462 that are out today. And it's a simple sort of red light, green light. That is real time right now. At any given time, you always have a few households out in any county. I'm trying to find the... here's one of my old maps. Okay, what was the day that the storm hit as we vamp here? It was this, what day?
27th was Saturday.
Hit on the 27th. So here's what the power outage map looked like. That gives you sort of the, see that, Madam Treasurer? So that gives you a sense of what was out. And then in the course, on a sort of real-time basis, or updated on the public website every few hours, you could click onto that map and see what sort of progress you're making. As you would go further down into the map, you could also get to a point where you could see where it would start to break down by zip code. So if you lived in 20814, you could see yesterday there were this many people out, but today there are these many people out, and so on and so forth.
It looks like the district is worse now than it was in the 27th.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, let's.
That's very good.
We learned some good things in this storm.
As we approach December 11th, next weekend, I think it's important for people to know that the government is planning and aware and has communications. If God forbid anything were to happen, it wouldn't come as a total surprise and be totally unprepared, as we were 10 years ago.
There's going to be given a talk someplace on Thursday, I think. There he is. We're just talking about power outages, and what an excellent job you did up there on those high wire lines and the bucket trucks. Boy, Montgomery County was better served this time than any time, and I think it was that training you received, those thick rubber gloves. And
was that big power saw I pulled out of the garage?
The big power saw. So anyway, we are on the Board of Public Works agenda. We've just begun. We've only just begun. So let me ask the Comptroller if he has any opening comments.
Thank you, Governor. And Madam Treasurer, it's a pleasure to be here. And we often use the term seismic event in politics sometimes to talk about proclamations and things. But I don't think we've ever, as the Governor may have noted, ever been put to the test with Mother Nature quite like this in the last week, several weeks. First, there was a sudden earthquake. Then there was the large hurricane. There's no way to prevent Hurricane Irene from reaching our shores, but thanks to the incredibly efficient and effective preventive steps taken by the state and by the local jurisdictions in the hurricane's path, we were able to minimize the loss of life and the damage to our state's infrastructure. And, Governor, you may have praised yourself. I'm sure you didn't because you're too modest, but you did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
Getting the state prepared, and it's easy to say in retrospect that it may have not have been what we thought it was, but it was.
Could have been.
It certainly felt like it around my house. We had five huge trees fall within a two-block radius of my house in Tacoma Park. Each of them had to be 100 years old. They wiped out all the telephone poles and wires. And it was, you know, definitely in spots pretty much of a disaster. And I have to admit, despite Pepco's reputation for previous cleanups, perhaps, they were out there all round the clock. And 3 o'clock in the morning, you'd hear the power saws going out there. And within 48 hours, the power was restored in that area of Tacoma Park, which, like a lot of areas, was hard hit. So I'd like to salute the Governor and General Jim Adkins and MEMA Director Richard Muth, and also Bev Staley and her leadership team, and everyone who took care of the transportation and infrastructure of the state. But most of all, just the folks that were on the front lines, and the first responders, obviously, the police and fire and emergency rescue crews. But I just have to emphasize the hard work of the folks that were either brought in from out of state or wherever they were gathered by folks in my area. It was just an incredible effort by a lot of hardworking people. So we survived. There was a remarkably low fatality count, and it just showed how great our state is, I believe, and how Marylanders rise to the challenge with good leadership. And I'd like to just recall 10 years ago when our nation was attacked by terrorists. We're going to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, but I think it's appropriate for us to take a moment and think about those folks that were out there at 3 in the morning battling the effects of Mother Nature. And solemn hearts will remember 9/11, but also just be proud of the way our state pulls together when times are tough. Thanks, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. All right, let's go to the...
Governor, could I just say one thing for the record? We have mentioned a couple of times, as you know, the possibility of doing a general obligation bond refunding if the market is right. That is, if we can get a low enough interest rate, we can get enough in return from investing the funds to make it worthwhile. It amounts to at least a 3% savings. There is a 70% chance that the opportunity will not come up again with these particular bonds. And it's a sufficient amount, which we've pegged at about refunding about $200 million and getting back at least $7 million in return for doing it. We are still looking at that. We had hoped that maybe next week would be the week, but it really depends on the market. And I promised at our last meeting we would just keep you informed, obviously. You'll know before we do it that we're just still looking at it and the numbers still aren't exactly right. And the second thing, just to follow up what the comptroller said, I mentioned earlier how impressed I was calling in on those calls and have everybody together, the state people, MEMA, the secretary. What is interesting is that the first call was scheduled to be called because the hurricane was coming, but the major topic of discussion was indeed an earthquake. Right. They anticipated, so I just found that one for the record books.
Economies of scale or something.
How was the power over in your area?
24 hours, less than 24 hours, which is, people were shocked. Now that's after a number of trees have been cut down, of course.
Well, it's dangerous to praise Pepco in our area, but whoever it was they brought in to cut the trees and put the lines back up did a good job.
The, also, in addition to, I thought Pepco did a very good job in this particular storm, but also Sameco in Southern Maryland also did a very good job. They took the Southern Maryland from my short travels around the state, and a few days after seemed to get really clobbered by the combination of the gusts and also the heavy rains. But Sameco did an outstanding job in getting them back up and running as well. So let's go to the first order of business here, which is the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 16 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 6 reports of emergency procurements. We are withdrawing item 5, which will return probably to the next meeting, and we are withdrawing item 16, which was a little bit of a hurricane hiccup for Treasurer's financing. That will be returning to a later agenda as well. So, only 14 remaining items and the 6 emergency reports. We are prepared for your questions.
Any questions, Secretary's agenda?
I have a couple of brief ones.
Okay.
Number 4. The wetlands license.
All right, Mrs. Golden.
Delmarva Power and Light. I just wondered why there was such a gap in time between the public comment period ending and the report and recommendation.
Mr. Moore, the application was received from Delmarva on August 12, 2010, and public comment ended November 1st, 2010, and NDE reported to you on August 3rd, 2011, which you've now processed on September 7th. Do you know anything about the period between the public comment period ending and the NDE report getting to you?
Because I assume there are only certain times of year you can lay these wires. Are there certain times of year you can lay the wires?
On certain projects, there are time of year restrictions. However, I can't honestly can't comment in the delay between November 1 and August under NDE's review on it. But, yeah, in terms of times of installation, it's to protect the fisheries and so forth. But that would not have anything to do with NDE's length of review.
Well, it just seems to me.
And it didn't appear to be
a long time.
It is a long time, and I agree with you. And it didn't appear to be a controversial project.
No.
There was no hearing or anything held.
Well, maybe we could try to find out about it.
I can get back to you.
Exactly. I imagine it probably is a resource issue.
It is a resource issue there, and we will talk with Mr. Sakai and
right.
Secretary.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
I had too much time going.
No, I appreciate you bringing that up because that's the information we need from the board members. Thank you.
5 was withdrawn?
5 was withdrawn. The lease was not completely signed by the team, but it's not a problem.
9. Is there anyone here from housing who could just explain to me?
Okay. Yes.
And I know you've tried to do it before, and I apologize for that. The program.
Hey, good morning. My name is George Eaton. I'm the Director of the Division of Credit Assurance for the Department of Housing and Community Development. And I'm here to talk about 9. 9 is a situation where we have 2 loans in place. We have a Maryland bond loan, which is the primary loan for the property. For example, for a $100,000 house, $95,000 of that house would be a Maryland bond loan. The secondary loan, which is a DSOP loan, which we bring before you today, are state loans which allow the person settlement and down payment assistance. And in order for us to do a short sale, which the collective group are today, we need to ask for your permission to release the DSOP loan and then establish a note with the individual for payment on that DSELP loan.
So the person now is substituting a personal obligation.
That's correct.
For a second mortgage. Is that
and those payments are never over $50 a month, so we keep it very reasonable
and
for them.
And meanwhile,
to be able to
it
recover.
Looks as though these houses are going for like half of what they were bought.
In many cases. It's really tied to, and I know the department has a map of where the primary foreclosures are and what's been hurt worse. But it's primarily in those counties where there's a tremendous amount of a run-up in value. And during that period of time, because of the tremendous amount of run-up in value, there was a tremendous amount of loss
right.
in those particular areas. Not all Maryland is totally reflective of this.
I was just amazed as I read there are about five of them, I think, right, that they were bought for 154. Mm-hmm. They're going for the value is approximately 75. You don't know what they're going to go for. 163 and going for 77.
Mm-hmm.
250 going for 158. I mean, it's really it's a 50% reduction, which gives you some idea of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
To the families.
And you also notice that these are, if you look at when they were purchased in 2006, 2007, which was at the very peak. These people got in and they said, oh, this is great, I've got a house, and they got in at the time when the properties were at their highest value.
So how many of these, do you have any idea how many of these we're going to see?
I'm sorry, how many
of these we're going to see eventually? I mean, I'm sure you're tracking.
I think we're going to see this kind of activity for the next year and a half, the 2 years, just because there's a normal activity with people who are underwater, and if they haven't got a job or they've been scaled back, they've lost time. This is primarily what we're seeing is people who have lost hours, lost part-time jobs, or have lost their jobs in between, and there's a couple that actually move out of state to try and find a job, or move so far away that they can't really utilize the house any longer.
Well, I just wondered what the story was that you were telling us, and it is really sad. I appreciate the fact, by the way, that in the background you're putting a little paragraph to explain what the situation is.
Well, they're not happy reading.
No, but it puts a human face on a lot of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All righty. Any questions, Secretary's agenda? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to Department of Natural Resources, Real Property.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Meredith Lasbury for the Department of Natural Resources. We have six items on the agenda this morning. Happy to answer any questions.
Program open space. Is it still called program open space?
It is still called program open space. It's just that this agenda has a lot more than just her program open space program, but yeah. She still favorably refers to his program open space.
Okay.
So there's good memories for everyone. A lot of goodwill in that meeting.
No. Okay. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget and Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 13 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Secretary, if you could have someone explain item 8, please.
Certainly. Item 8 is a request or retroactive approval to increase the amount available on the contract to pay an outstanding invoice that's due to Integrated Designs. It's a Department of Transportation item, and from the department is Cheryl Hill, who is the Deputy Administrator.
Okay.
Actually, I'll take it, Eloise.
Okay.
Beverly Swains Daly, Secretary, Maryland Department of Transportation. This is the first of probably several items, Mr. Comptroller, that we're going to be bringing back as a result of the SHA audit. We have been working with your staff and all of the board staff, actually, as we're working through items. This was a very clear-cut case of an item that should have been brought to the board by the State Highway Administration. Instead, I think they had piggybacked on an MTA contract, and while there were sign-offs for that, this would really have been the proper way to do it, and so that's why we're bringing it back here now. We've been working with your staff on these, so we appreciate their help on that, but this is the first one of those.
So the contracts that you're finding where they had do not exceed, but people look for other vehicles to exceed the contract, you're bringing back to us for...
We're bringing them back if we believe it would have been more appropriate for them to have brought them to the board in the first place, yes.
And has this happened a lot through these interagency cooperative agreements?
This is fairly rare. There will be other kinds of contracts, though, that we will be bringing back for your review and approval. But an interagency one is fairly unusual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I applaud the audit and the response because potentially there's a whole can of worms here that affects the integrity of the procurement process, and I think that's...
They had a contract, and this would have been the best way if they wanted to add to that, would have been to simply bring it back. So that's what we're doing now.
Particularly because it said do not exceed.
Exactly.
Thank you, Governor.
I'm trying to understand the response to a question that our office asked you, and I do understand what the comptroller was saying. It says SHA and MTA even executed an MOU for contract utilization, but then MTA cited lack of contract authority. Is that just simply another complication, or was that not...
I think so, and again, that may be a legal question because there was legal sign-off just for legal sufficiency, but clearly SHA had a vehicle with the firm, and they should have used it. So we're still trying to sort through sort of the legality of whether or not they...
But I hope MTA...
There was sign-off, but this is definitely the best way to do it, and our message from now on will be this is what should be done.
You understand, I was asking more from the perspective of MTA doing it than the SHA... part, which you did address.
Well, I guess they could, but again, they were using up their capacity, so it would have been better to have kept it as an SHA contract.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think what I'm trying to address here is there's some sense out there in the agency that the board is an extra detail or complexity that has to be somehow avoided, if possible, through this kind of complicated procedure. And we meet, as you know, every 2 weeks you're here. We're always available to look at a contract extension.
That is correct, and that is a message that we have to work on. There should never be any implication that there was any reason why these contracts cannot come to the board. You all have always been extremely responsive.
Well, and I must say, the matter at hand is MDOT and SHA, and the audit was SHA. Those are not the only people who seem to be reluctant to bring things to the board because of fear that it will either take too long or somehow they'll be treated meanly. And I hope you all can help you. We're only trying to do our jobs and shine a little sunshine on things and actually make things move more smoothly.
Speaking for the department, we do not have an issue, and we're working to make sure that everyone who works on these contracts down to the lowest levels understand there are procedures which must be followed.
All the MENO people have left.
Right.
So
just us. I have a question about number 12. It's the DHCD contract. And my only question is, you gave us a lot of input under the description mm-hmm. of the contract. The last paragraph of your description went into six input, outstanding inputs. But what I don't sense from this is what output measures you're using. So we know what they did, but how do you know they were successful?
So just for the record, this is a request to increase the amount for additional marketing services for your Maryland Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program.
Right.
And we have the Deputy Secretary here.
Right. I'm Clarence Snuggs, Deputy Secretary of DHCD. I have with me Jackie Lampel, who's our Communications Director. And as the Secretary mentioned, this is a request to increase an existing contract with MediaWorks. The purpose of it is to add additional resources in our efforts to implement the Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program, which we were awarded back in April. That program expires at the end of September, and so our efforts have been to push those funds, get those resources out throughout Maryland, and we've used MediaWorks as our primary source of helping the outreach in addition to other outreach efforts. To homeowners who qualify for that.
So the
program.
Accountability measure in the end is whether the money all gets out or not.
Our goal is to make 1,274 mortgages for $41.6 million. We started on April 2nd, and we have until September 30th to make that happen. And we're marching down that road right now.
So
if you want specific numbers, I have numbers.
No, but they reduce some of the advertising price, the cost. Of advertising and got some spots free of charge. I mean, all those were very good things that I have no reason to doubt they did accomplish. But in the end, the question is, having done that, were they effective in getting the word out, and how do you know they were effective?
Yes, Treasurer Kopp. I would say working with MediaWorks has been a very good experience for DHCD because, as Deputy Secretary Snuggs mentioned, we're well on our way to meeting our goal of getting out all of the money that was given to us by HUD for the Emergency Mortgage Assistance Program. In addition to that, we are tracking the number of phone calls that come in over our HOPE hotline, and we are tracking the number of hits that come in to the MD HOPE site. And we're able to see over a period of time between last April and the month of July at this point that the number of hits, for instance, on MD HOPE has gone up from about 20,000 to 69,000. So the number of people hearing the message is clearly increasing by leaps and bounds. Also, in addition to helping us get a lower price for some of the advertising, getting us some of the value-added things such as website placements, they came up with ideas that, you know, we hadn't thought of, like advertising on a boat in Ocean City, you know, where people, that's going across while people are on the beach, mortgage late, don't wait, that sort of a thing. So we were advertising in movie theaters and trying to use the money in the best possible way to get the best possible results.
Yeah.
I can also tell you, Madam Treasurer, that our foreclosures in Maryland are at the lowest point that they've been since April of 2007. And Chris, Kevin, I don't know if you can get the that graph up from my daily reports on mortgages, mortgage events and how they're tracking, but it's, I'll get it.
Through the end of, Governor, through the end of the second quarter, Maryland was down 54% as compared to the end of last year, the second quarter of last year.
In foreclosure
events, which is made up of defaults and sales and auctions. So that it's down 54%. Overall, it's down 68% first half of this year versus first half of last year. So there's a significant reduction. We had about 4,500 foreclosure events in Maryland in the second quarter, and in the first quarter of 2010, we had 14,800.
Is there a way to tie this program, not the advertising, but the program, to the reduction in foreclosures or to keeping people? So you got the money out for emergency mortgage assistance. You're going to get it all out.
Yes.
And people will be aware of the program.
Yes.
And then what is the impact of that in terms of people having housing?
Well, the effort is to try to keep families who have been negatively impacted by the recession due to loss of income, reduction in income, or major medical experience who couldn't make their mortgage payments. The purpose of this loan is to help get them up to date and to work with them. We'd make a portion of their payment over the next up to 24 months, which is time, hopefully, for the recovery and for them to get back to where they were prior to that event. So our efforts have been to outreach to these families. Not everybody qualifies. Not everybody is eligible. It is a loan that we're making on behalf of the federal government, and so we need to get the word out across the state. As I said earlier, our goal is to try to serve about 1,300 Marylanders that we can try to keep in their homes as a result of this mortgage, which helps to, I think, stabilize their personal financial situation as well as communities which have been negatively impacted by foreclosures. So we want to try to help people who are on that edge. This is a resource that we don't have. We didn't have at the state level. We got funding from from HUD through the president as a part of the banking and Wall Street reform bill, the Dodd-Frank bill. And so we were able to use those funds directly for the purposes that HUD designed, which is to help keep Maryland families who have had a negative impact because of income.
And you assume there are about 1,300?
We, based on our calculations, we're going to look to do about $41.6 million in these loans. The average loan is about $32,600. If you do the math, it comes out to about 1,274 loans that we will be able to do based on those averages. And so far, we've taken 2,600 applications for about $87 million. There are a lot of folks who fall out for different reasons. We've approved about $26 million so far. We believe that based on where we are right now, we can take probably another 541 applications before we start to run out of time. So we're working. We're sort of at the end of this, but we still want to make that push to make sure we get all of these resources utilized. And the advertising, the promotion, has been critical to our success in reaching throughout the state.
So you're projecting based on experience about 1,300.
1,274.
And this is based on assumptions regarding the employment rate, unemployment rate?
1,274 is based on our approval rate.
Right.
Based on the applications that we see.
Okay.
About 40% of the applications
Okay.
are folks that we can approve.
So if unemployment goes up, that's irrelevant really to your projections?
If it goes up, it makes folks more. If there's a minimum of a 15% reduction in pre-event income, that is sort of one of the primary characteristics, a primary requirements. So if a person's income has gone down by 15% or has gone to zero, then yes, that would be one of the eligibility requirements. There are others.
But your 1,300 is based on the amount of money that
you're getting
right now.
The amount of money we have, the average loan, our approval rate, and that calculates out to the number of Marylanders we can serve.
Yeah, I mean, that's wonderful if we can do 1,300 and it provides the bridge and they get jobs, keep jobs, and everything else. Together. I had the unpleasant experience of reviewing on the computer some congressional debates, so I'm in a dark mood, but I'm glad to know we're doing what we can.
Yes.
So the bottom line is you expect to do how many at what amount?
1,274 Marylanders, and we're averaging about $32,000 per loan. The maximum is 50. In Maryland, we're averaging $32,000 per loan.
And in many cases, this allows people to catch up with their arrearage.
Yes.
As they get back to work.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. It gives them a chance to catch up. A lot of them would not be able to get a modification through their servicer because their incomes
right.
have been reduced, or they're not getting the proper response from the servicer. And therefore, this is an option that was not on the table before.
A related question,
sure.
And I think you're the gentleman. Bank of America said that they had changed their program in the last year and it had set up a large number of people screening their mortgages, particularly those they got from Countrywide, which may not have been the greatest purchase Bank of America ever made. But that there was a sense that things were working better now than they were because they had a lot of people out there processing the loans at several locations across the state. Do you get any sense of that at all?
I would say that there has been improvement. I think it's primarily because they were so bad. They had a significant portion of our market share as a result of their acquisitions over the years, and they were one of the more difficult servicers to work with, not very responsive, per the conversations we've had with our housing counselors and our pro bono legal folks. They were difficult to work with. I think it has improved probably over the last 6 months, but we've been at this since, you know, the first quarter of 2007, and it was really rough in those first years getting them to be responsive.
So you sense some improvement?
Yes.
And clearly I infer a way to go.
Yes, there have been improvement. I think those statements are true. But they're a big player.
They're a very big player.
And the
purchase of Countrywide made them a huge player.
Huge.
Which, I hope it works out.
Madam Treasurer, this is the graph right here showing you on a set bi-weekly at the bottom. I can't see from that far away. Or is that monthly?
Monthly.
Sort of our trend. The black dots is the national rate of foreclosure, and the blue is Maryland. Right around that peak time, as it was climbing to that peak, was when we enacted the mandatory mediation. And then the whole hotline, the outreach, the fact that we had this apparatus in motion, I think, is so that when the bill was enacted that allowed us to get these loans, I mean, a lot of other states are still trying to figure
out who the people are that
are eligible for these loans. But because we had the network of people that both of you had been funding and supporting out there with the HOPE network, because we had that hotline, and because we did the mandatory mediation, I think we were able to get our graph anyway moving in the right direction. For a long time, we were threatening for the better part of a year to actually be higher than the national foreclosure rate, and starting to accelerate up before we finally got it down.
What was at the other end of pre-crisis normal?
The lowest it's been since this time, I think, is right around there, April of 2007.
So was that bumping on the bottom, the normal rate before?
Yeah, bumping on the bottom was 06, and then at the beginning of 07, January of 07, is when it starts to escalate up there, that my feeble eyes do not betray me. And see, at first we were way under the national rate, and then we started to threaten to go above it. That first
bump. So where are we at the other
end
again?
Significantly below.
So we're below the normal national rate.
The national rate, yes.
Not the national rate now, but the normal national rate before.
Shrink it down again so we can see the whole thing in a glance there, Kevin. And you did an excellent job of blowing it up.
If you assume that was the normal national rate, 0.8?
Right. Yeah, how about that?
We're points. It's at 0.5 in July.
0.5. So nothing. But that's as bad as it is for Maryland. We're not that far from what it normally is in the United States of America, it looks like.
And no, we're considerably below where the country is today.
Right.
We've made significant improvement over the past year. We're still faced with a lot of folks who are underwater that we have to deal with. But
I hope our national friends know.
They know.
I mean, see that we're making use of these programs so that people.
We're very excited about our work with EMMA, with Emergency Mortgage Assistance. We've been leading from day one with a number. We have, there are five substantially similar states that got funds directly. The others are working through the Naval Works Network and HUD, mm-hmm. administered by them. We're administering our program ourselves, and we're way ahead of the other states that were that are in that pool with us. And both loans
if only we were
and closed.
If only we were failing and ineffective, we might get some press for it.
That's right. This is too good news. I've learned that lesson.
We had an article on this on yesterday.
Did you?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
Eileen Ambrose wrote a positive article.
I apologize. Blank of assertion.
You are on target to do your spend by September 30th.
Absolutely.
Kevin, can you find that article in the Sun? We want to frame it and put a gold seal on it.
That's really good, chart. I mean, it tells a very sad story, and every foreclosure is a terrible thing. But
I think the key to our success from the very beginning has been the variety of things that we've done. Not just a single solution. We've done things. We had the Hope Hotline before the National Hope Hotline existed. We had one in Maryland. And we've received over 50,000 phone calls from Maryland since the very beginning. We've expanded our network of housing counseling organizations. I mentioned earlier the pro bono legal attorneys. We've trained over 1,100. Judge Bell helped us with getting them to volunteer to participate. We've had some active participation by our legal community. We've reached out in very creative ways to through our faith community, community-based organizations all over to get the word out, to get people to move. Our motto is, you know, mortgage late, don't wait. We put that out there with the hotline, and I think it showed with the implementation of IMLA as an extension, along with some of the legal things that have been done with the notification law that went into effect, as well as mediation that went into effect recently. All of those things, I think, are combining to show even more results.
Excellent. Progress. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on Department of Budget Management agenda item? Controller.
Item 10 and 11.
Okay. Item 10 and 11 are both a request to extend the current contract for the eligibility assessment and resource coordination services, one in Central Maryland, the other in Western Maryland. The extension is to be for 9 months to give the department an opportunity to complete their regulations to put into place the fee-for-service system. And the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Health is here, Mr. Kim.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm happy to answer your questions on this item.
Okay. 6 months ago, we gave you a six-month extension. Now you're asking for a nine-month extension. Is this the last we're going to see this request for extensions?
I believe so, and I will qualify that statement. Slight bit of background on this is that the Developmental Disabilities Administration within DHMH is proposing to move to a fee-for-service-based model to serve the over 18,000 individuals with disabilities. What that means is that the state will be able to seek reimbursement from the federal government at a clip of 50%. In order to do that, the service coordinator agencies that are comprised of the local health departments and two major private vendors who work with us will have to start billing the federal government directly for the services rendered. In addition, the benefit is that the state will be able to serve approximately 3,000 more individuals who are currently on the waiting list immediately. Without having to apply for a Medicaid waiver. So 3,000 additional individuals, approximately $10 to $11 million of extra revenue that will come into the state for these services. The original extension that was approved by this body did call for the implementation of regulations so that the state of Maryland could put this into effect. In the spring of 2011, the administration was prepared to move forward as such. Secretary Sharfstein upon his arrival to the state, had decided to have a round of stakeholder meetings, meaning the advocates for these individuals, the service providers themselves, the local health departments, and so forth. And there was a very much a consensus that there wasn't enough communication and rollout of this particular plan, meaning that there are certain technical requirements that these entities would have to go through, as I had mentioned, to build the federal government for these services. Those structures were not sufficiently in place in the spring of 2011 when the Secretary had done these round of stakeholder meetings. At the time, the Secretary, DDA, who now has a new director, did not feel that ramming this down the throats of our providers was in the best interest of our clients, meaning these 18 to 20,000 individuals. We did not want to jeopardize their level of service for this. The alcohol tax, however, at the same time, we weren't sitting on our hands because with the advent of the $15 million in the alcohol tax, we were able to address the neediest individuals on that waiting list this fiscal year, for which we are aggressively implementing right now. Again, with the buy-in, with the support and the coordination of our providers. So that being said, there was a concerted decision to ensure that we have all our ducks in a row before implementing this new fee-for-service model. And so we've done extensive communications. I think I have there's a service provider here who can attest to that, but we have been meeting extensively with all of our stakeholders throughout the spring and the summer, and we feel that within the next 6 to 8 weeks, we will be able to make a firm decision on whether to indeed move to the new fee-for-service model or stick with the status quo, which is issuing contracts out to service coordination providers. If it is the latter, we will have given ourselves enough time to put a new solicitation out on the street to get bidders and a selection made, you know, within that 9-month period.
Terrific. So my concern, once again, is just these repetition of these short-term contracts. For example, do we pay a premium when we do a 6-month extension or a 9-month extension as opposed to...
No, these rates will remain as they are.
Your statement today seems to imply that the fee-for-service model favored by the federal government is not the direction we may end up going in?
I can't say with moral certainty that we will do that. But we are certainly leaning in that direction. And again, you know,
in which direction?
To move forward the new fee-for-service model for which we will be able to service 3,000 additional individuals and receive $11 million of additional funds.
Thank you, Governor.
Good question.
Thank you.
If you go to fee-for-service, it'll be done within this fiscal year? It'll all be done within this fiscal year?
If we do, it will be at the beginning of fiscal 13, so July. Which will be at the tail end of the existing extension.
I think it would be worthwhile if you informed the comptroller, informed us as things went on, where you were going.
Absolutely.
And how you make up the $11 million and help the 3,000 people that wouldn't be helped if you didn't go in that direction.
So, mark me down as reluctant approval.
Okay.
We are on anything else from the Department of Budget Management? Controller moves approval. Second by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it with one reluctant approval. We go on to the University System of Maryland.
I loved the new uniforms.
I thought they were great.
We love them too.
I thought they were very cool.
The story is there's no such thing as bad publicity. Whether you like it or not, you're talking about Maryland.
Absolutely. Just typical Crabtown naysayers. I thought it was great.
Hope you like the next 32 variations.
New uniform every game?
It's my understanding they have 32 different variants of uniforms. I would say at least one every game.
Was that to confuse the enemy?
It seemed to work.
Yeah, that was good.
That's a very good thing you all won. We won.
For the record, I'm Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 9 items on today's agenda. Be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Have you all talked about doing something where you have people register online whether they like the uniform with a thumbs up or a thumbs down? You could get a lot of followers.
Really don't know, but I'll suggest that to the athletic department.
We did that once with what I thought was a god awful color scheme for one of the Bridges of Variety 3 when I was mayor. But the public had voted me, and we went with the god awful color scheme for that bridge. Still sports today.
Well, one of the treasurer's staff members pointed out yesterday that the Maryland flag is known from the flag to be taken into battle, and that's what the soldiers all fall behind. So here you have the whole team and fight on. I think there you go. So warrior aspect, and we're leaving them onto the field.
I liked it.
That must have done it. I think the idea of people voting on things, though, is you ought to take that back. Because as soon as people feel that they've got a stake in something, they begin paying more attention.
Got it.
No problem. As long as we win games.
And Comptroller moves approval. Any questions? Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed?
Thank you.
The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have 4 items on our agenda. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Move on now to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning. For the record, Beverly Swain Staley representing MDOT. We have 24 items today, and item 24 is a supplemental item. I'm happy to answer any questions.
No.
Yes.
I have something that's not a question on 15, but an observation on NAA, the Aviation Administration, that in fact there is a decrease in the contract amount. According to the description, the reduction is due to outdated and obsolete equipment which is no longer used, presumably showing that investing in updated equipment, in fact, does pay off. And I just think it's good.
What item was that?
15. It's not a lot of money.
Radio repair.
But sometimes just hanging on to things and cutting, as opposed to investing in the right places, doesn't pay off in the same way.
Looks like that car that costs you more to repair every month.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have one like that myself. congratulate whoever made the wise investment.
I'll pass that on. Thank you.
And the other thing, while you're at it, Madam Secretary, just personally, items 16 and 17, both aviation administration, small contracts. The point is, though, they are renewals, and in the remarks, the administration, in fact, points out why they think it should be renewed and why it was a good contract, how it was effective, and I really appreciate that. And think if all of the renewals had something in there specifically, I know Colonel Friedlander was very interested in that. It's just very helpful to know why we're renewing a contract, not just because it's there, but because it accomplished something.
Okay, we'll try to include that.
Yeah.
Any other questions, Department of Transportation budget items? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Last but never least, Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller, Al Collins for the Department of General Services. Today we have 34 items on our agenda. Item 7 has been revised, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you have at this time on any of these items. Governor, if I could go off topic for just a second. In preparation for Hurricane Irene last week, as you were previously leading your team, we certainly always appreciate your leadership. There was a well-placed phone call near the end of the day on Friday before Saturday from the Deputy Treasurer's Office, promoted by the Treasurer. And it was the first time I remember that the Treasurer's Office, number one, was proactive in helping us figure out what to do if we had significant issues.
Sometimes it takes a few years.
By providing insurance and claim information beforehand, as well as making available her vast array of building people who would be available to help assist us over the weekend and during the week if we needed that kind of assistance. Madam Treasurer, I want to thank you on behalf of us that do the operational end of what we do. It was made our lives a lot easier, took a lot of grief, and took away a lot of concerns that we had in terms of if we had a major significant event, what would we do?
Thank you very much. You embarrass me.
I'm sorry.
I appreciate your comments, and what embarrasses me is that I didn't start out by saying a number of people from the Treasurer's Office worked the weekend just to make sure that they would be there on call for insurance purposes, et cetera, and I would like to publicly thank them.
Thank you.
They didn't have to do it, but they're devoted. Just as the comptroller's folks are there opening the taxes over the weekends when they don't have to be and doing all the other things, there are public servants all over this state who are devoted to accomplishing their tasks and staying at the job and not just being there 9 to 5, as unfortunately sometimes the public image would have you think.
I just want to thank you for that work, yeah. Madam Treasurer.
Thank you. Governor, number four. It's the Glen Burnie Armory, but what I just want to comment again, little Nancy Cop, little the description. They're putting on a new roof, a white roof, and I want to thank you. It's extremely energy efficient, environmentally friendly, but as you know, the Secretary of Energy, Dr. Chu, a Nobel Prize winner, pointed out that if only a larger percentage of the roofs were white, meaning a certain type of color and material, it would be the most immediate and significant energy and environmental saving thing that could be done, and not terribly expensive or difficult. So I would hope that as we go on, we look at this sort of
thank you, Matt.
And for the public school system and all of the buildings, the public homes.
We are looking to make it more of a rule rather than the exception.
Yeah.
We think
really
that's the general for this.
Which one is this?
It's item 4M. It's the
page 8 they described.
Yeah.
Replacement of the Glen Burnie Armory.
But it's just an example, especially if you're talking about the buildings that were built in the 60s with the large pad flat roofs. You might as well take advantage.
Right. They're not solar, they should be white, huh?
Yeah.
Imagine a jobs program to do that with all of this blacktop moose.
Yes.
Okay. Any further questions on this one? Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the controller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed?
Governor, before we adjourn, I was also remiss in not in the beginning introducing Suzanne Brogan, the new Deputy State Treasurer for Public Policy. Suzanne, many of you know, came originally out of the legislature and then was a member of the Public Service Commission. The Comptroller and I have worked with her for many years, as have many people here, and we welcome her and thank her for being here and thank you all for reaching out a friendly hand.
Congratulations, Ms. Brogan. Welcome aboard. And this concludes our meeting. Thank you all very, very much.